Hi there, good morning. This is Jewel Hallmeyer, the former costume designer for SCTV, amongst other things. And I am here on Dave Gone By UNC Radio to speak with Rabbi Saul Solomon. Hit it.
Shalom, shalom, my friends. Good morning to you. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And usually, I am very excited to talk to people who are Jewish. But today, I am even more excited to talk to someone who is Jewish, because his name... That's right.
Well, you sound like one of Rick Moranis' characters on SCTV. He would do a Saul Solomon, I'm sure.
Oh, he certainly would. Or yeah, Martin Short could probably do one, too. But
and Marty would do it, too.
But there's only one me, thank God.
That's right.
And me is, Rabbi Saul Solomon, the person you're hearing joking and laughing. This is a man named Jewel Hallmeyer, and he mentions...
Right.
Second City Television, because he was the costume designer and occasionally the choreographer for that wonderful comedy program that really changed the face of comedy, both in Canada and here in the much more important United States. So, Jewel Hallmeyer to talk about his years at SCTV, plus all the things that he has been doing before and since. So, welcome, first of all, Shalom, Jewel.
Well, thank you so much. Happy to be a part of it.
Oh, well, you are now. Wait till we start talking. But the question, first of all, is how the hell do you have double letters in both of your names? What the hell kind of name is Jewel Hallmeyer?
It's very, very Dutch. I was born in Haarlem, Holland, which is just outside of Amsterdam.
I'm afraid to go to Haarlem. They always beat me up over there.
That's why I say I'm born in Amsterdam.
Or that Haarlem. Very good. Okay.
Yeah.
And when were you born? You're not a youngish man. When were you born over here?
49. Not young.
It was post-war, so everything... Do you have memories? You moved from Haarlem to the United States when you were six. So do you have any memories?
Bakersfield.
Bakersfield where? Iowa?
California.
California. Oh, that makes sense. But do you have any memories of... Holland before, you know, when you were a little child, anything?
I can remember the inside of my house and everything about my childhood there. Ooh. Nothing but fond memories, but I don't know why, but it's all of the years, both in Holland, in California, and in Oregon, I remember, God, tiny, tiny little details that no one else in my family seems to remember.
Maybe you were hallucinating. Were they giving you weird formula over there?
Do I have a formula? No.
No, were they giving you strange formula to drink, if nobody else remembers what you do?
I don't think it was that strange. I had my mother's milk for 3 years, so you can blame her.
You know, I had your mother's milk for 3 years, too. It was delicious.
You know that?
Oh, it was yummy. Yummy stuff. But let me ask, what is a detail that you remember of growing up in Haarlem?
Haarlem. Well, one of the main things is, and I still have nightmares about it because I still have the little plaque, but we had a plaque of two parrots up on the third floor where I slept with my brother, and a man breaking into our house and running up the stairs and tickling me to death as a child. And I still have that hanging in my bedroom today as a reminder, so that's why I still have nightmares about it.
Wait a minute. So this was a relative?
It's a what?
We're talking about a relative here?
No, not a completely unknown, like stick figure kind of person.
Okay, so this is called a dream. This is like a memory. What, hello?
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, I'm just trying to... So we're talking about a dream, not a memory, I hope.
Well, I remember the... Yeah, it's not a real memory.
Oh, okay, I thought the people...
I remember having had the dream.
There. Dutch people aren't that skinny, my God. I mean, you are. You eat... So, was it a... did you like living in Bakersfield, California?
Yeah, I enjoyed it, except it was on the first day that we were there, the neighbors taught us how to fry an egg on the sidewalk because it was smack dab in the middle of the Mojave Desert. So it was hotter than anything we'd ever encountered before.
Oh, that's true. But did you, you didn't miss winter, though, did you?
No, didn't miss winter.
Okay, I'm just saying, you know, it's a trade-off. California has some very nice things about it compared to Harlem.
That's right.
Not to mention Harlem, for goodness sake.
Harlem, yeah.
So when did you realize that you had a talent for drapery, costumery, and clothery, as it were?
Well, I didn't really realize that I had a talent at all. I wanted to become an opera singer, but no one would listen to me or accept my demo tape, so I applied for every job in the newspaper that didn't require a university degree. And the first place I applied when I came to Toronto was Malabar Costumes, and the man that was hiring was a Dutchman. So I became his apprentice immediately.
Of course. It's one of those things that we in my tribe say was beshert. It just was the right thing at the right time in the right place.
Exactly, yeah.
Now,
then I got really lucky because while I was working there, Malabar was dressing 90% of all of the operas being staged in North America at the time, so I worked with a lot of international designers putting shows together. And at the same time, Bob Mackie and Rip Turner came in to do the pilot for the Sonny and Cher show. So I asked if I could go out to the studio to see how a TV show is put together, and they let me come every night and on weekends, and I thought, shit, I could do this. And so I gave a complete false resume with all kinds of lies that I'd been to Parsons School of Design to the TV station there, CTV, and they called me on it and asked me to come into their office, and they said, this is all a crock. And I said, I know it is, but I just want a chance. And they said, okay, if you want to sweep the floor in the carpentry shop for the next 6 months, as soon as something comes along, we'll give you a crack at it. And then I was in the door.
Right. So I guess the moral of this story is, lie! Lie on your resume, make stuff up. What a moral tale this is to tell from Jule Hallmeyer.
I know. Jule Hallmeyer would say, don't go to school, get a job, and learn as you go.
Well, aside from that, no, but also people are so like, oh, don't lie on your resume, they'll find out, they'll make phone calls, but it's like, get the job, lie, and then if you're good, they won't care that you lied, you know?
That's right.
Unless you're a lawyer lying about the bar, that could be kind of problematic.
That's right.
Or a surgeon kind of a thing. It's like, well, you never actually held a scalpel, you looked at a scalpel on TV, that could be problematic. So,
exactly.
So now you're at CCTV, not SCTV, but at the Canadian television, right?
TV, yep.
And you're doing, did you ever actually design a gown for Bob Mackie for Cher that she wore?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, okay, just one.
No. I was his shmata schlepper and just bought fabrics and stuff and watched how he put together stuff for the show. He was brilliant.
What did you learn? Was there anything specific that you can put into words that you learned from watching either Bob Mackie or your Dutch overlord?
I learned a lot, actually, because I learned how the inner workings of a dress work, how you can get the boobs to stay up and be perky, and
That's important.
How to do variety character costuming, which she was brilliant at, as was Rhett Turner, and that carried on through everything that I did after that.
That's true. Hey, do you watch, I'm sure you must, the shows, the reality shows of it's not coming into my head, but where they make a dress out of schmatas for a week and they're up against each other. What's it called?
God, I don't watch any of the reality shows because they've killed my rental business altogether.
Why? How do you mean that? Why?
Huh?
Why have they killed your rental business?
They're cheaper to make than movies of the week, which we used to live on here.
Oh.
When I stopped designing 12 years ago, I started renting all of my vintage clothing that I had, over 1 million pieces, to movies and television shows, which was fine until the reality shows came in. And it took away big chunks of change that normally would have been intended for movies of the week, and the whole system sort of changed.
Wow. I mean, I guess that makes complete sense. It also intrigues me that you have a million pieces of... Now, these are not... Are these clothing that you sewed and made? Or you say they're vintage, you just got them from clothing shops and thrift stores and other costume shops?
Yeah, I've traveled all over buying stuff in upstate New York and in Ontario, and every town I worked in when I did shows across Canada, I would travel around and buy original vintage clothing.
And now you warehouse it where?
Here in Toronto.
So you have, a big
space. I
have a company
called Homemade Tarps.
Homemade Tarp? Is it tarps with a P or T?
T.
Homemade tarts, so I could use some of those.
Yeah.
What are their names? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
It used to be Homemade Tart Sluts and Hussies, but the police made me take down the signage.
You're kidding me.
Some neighbors, no.
But why did you name it Tart Sluts and Hussies?
Well, because I used to do a lot of traffic.
Well, you used to do a lot of what?
I used to do a lot of very trashy beaded feathered gowns for various entertainers for Vegas shows. So that's what we called them. Homemade Tart Sluts and Hussies.
Good Lord. At least you should have an acronym or something like, I don't know. We have only real... I'm trying to do whore as the acronym here, but it's too early in the morning. I can't do it. But okay, so you have a. I have to wonder. How much do you insure a million pieces of clothing for? It must be like $10 million, $20 million or something. No.
I've had no insurance for the last 25 years.
Wait, sure. Somebody will rob you.
None. No, because I had insurance for the longest time, and I was paying through the nose for it.
Right.
And then I had gone to Halifax to do a show, and the roof had collapsed, and the water from water damage, and it came through and destroyed everything that was there. And I tried to make a collection on the policy, and they just the adjuster just kept trying to get names of famous people that I had worked with from me because he was a wannabe screenwriter. In the end, I never got a dime.
Wait, what was their excuse for not paying off?
They said it was due to neglect on the part of the landlord, so I had to sue him. I said, well, that's not my job.
Oh, boy.
Pay me, and then you sue the landlord.
So, okay, tell us, get your revenge. Who was your insurer?
At this point anymore because I dropped them.
Okay, I mean, you don't have to name a full name. I'm talking about the name of the company.
I can't remember what the name of the company was. It was an independent.
Well, there you go. So now, hopefully, you know, you're kind of on a wing and a prayer. Hopefully, your roof doesn't collapse and et cetera and so forth.
That's right.
Now, if you have a million pieces of costume, I'm wondering about this. How do you keep, not just water damage or mildew or things like that, but moths and stuff like that? How do you always go through them, like once a month, to see that they're okay? How much maintenance is involved?
You can pretty well tell. We've got moth traps everywhere that we replace every 3 months. And once in a while you'll pull something out and the moths will have gotten to it, but that's the cost of doing business. The only time that I've had a real problem is when I'm not here for a long period of time, and then you come back and you realize, oh my God, they've eaten through the whole rack of cashmere sweaters, you know?
And even if you put them in, you don't put each individual thing in like a plastic, like the thing you get from the cleaners?
No. It doesn't breathe in plastic, so you can't do that.
Well, so what is it? It's like a human being. Why does it have to breathe?
Cloth, it has to breathe.
Or else?
Or else it rots.
Really?
Yeah.
Ew, okay.
Yeah. Never keep it in plastic. It's not good for you.
What about like when they put the meat in that plastic seal that you see on TV, where it keeps it for 7 months in the freezer, and it's still good? Can you do that?
That's really not true.
Oh, all right.
You got to watch that. You're going to get freezer burn on it.
Ay.
Yeah.
That's what she said. No, but okay, we're talking with Jewel Hallmeyer here on the Dave's Gone By radio program of the air. I know everybody wants me to ask about it and start talking about it. So you are at CCTV, Canadian television, you're learning the ropes, you're sweeping the floors, you're moving up to start doing things. How did that get to Second City Television?
Well, I got really lucky, again, in the beginning of working there. I was doing a Hallmark Hall of Fame called The Borrowers with Eddie Albert and Tammy Grimes and Dame Judith Anderson.
Wow.
And I got nominated for an Emmy Award. So all of a sudden, I was legitimate, even though I really still didn't know my ass from my elbow. But all of a sudden, that worked. And I got lots of shows after that to do at that particular station for co-productions with CBS. And one of them was the David Steinberg show that we did here, at which point I got to meet the producer of the show, who was also the producer of SCTV. John Candy was on it, Dave Thomas was on it, Martin Short was on it.
Oh.
The whole SCTV cast was basically on the Steinberg show as well, so that's when we first met.
Now, can I ask you, Steinberg, I remember as a little child, had a show on American TV. Was it the same one that they were simulcasting, or did he come over to America to do the show?
Which one was that?
I mean, it would have been the late 1960s, if not earlier.
This one we did in the 70s.
So, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if it was like the Canadian show that we rebroadcast here, or if he did his Canadian show and then he started directing and doing things in America and he had a different show here. I'm just curious. But
I don't know. He started out in Winnipeg, so he is a Canadian.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And Jewish, by the way.
I don't know where his show aired in America. Yeah.
So now, knowing all those people from the David Steinberg show and that producer, then they went off to do SCTV and they took you with them as the costume designer.
Well, I turned it down for the first year, regrettably, because I had one look at their schedule and the six binders full of sketches that they were going to do and the amount of money they had in the budget. And I said, it can't be done for that amount of money. I said, I would die after 1 year and I can't risk my career on doing that. And it's my biggest regret ever for not having done that. And then once it went network and they had the money and they moved it to Edmonton, that's when I came on board and I did 5 years with them.
Right, exactly. And it still was a very low budget show, but the budget went up just enough that...
Pay up, yeah.
Now, did you have you must have had an assistant or two or three.
Oh, yeah. I had a huge amount of help on that show. Eva Richter was the buyer who came up with the most incredible character stuff. Mother Trudy was a cutter and sewer on the show, and Luigi at Malabar Costumes here in Toronto made a whole bunch of stuff because he had a huge workroom with 40 people in it, and
wow.
He brought everything to make. Like if we were doing Shake and Bake and I needed 30 character costumes in primary colors, like so that they could pop out of a cartoon book, he would drop everything and 2 days later I'd come and pick up the complete costume from top to bottom, you know.
So in a way you were giving them the design or the sketches and stuff and they would make them. So you weren't physically sewing all day. Or were you sometimes?
Not me, no. I was just sketching and making stuff with my glue gun, making hats and finding stuff.
Mm.
No, I wasn't sewing. They wouldn't trust me with that. I was never any good at it.
Now, what's an example, let's say, if there was a character that one of the SCTV people would do? Would they tell you pretty much everything and then you went off and did? Or did you sit down with the actor and say, they say, I see this. You say, well, let's add that. You sketch and it goes. I mean, how did that work?
That rarely happened. Like, you would read the script and try to relate to the character, and then either it was obvious that you had to make it because you weren't going to find it, or we went out and looked for it and then gave them several options, lining them up in my first choice, second choice, third choice, fourth choice, fifth choice. And they usually went with what I picked for the first choice. It was uncanny. But they had options. It was never like you have to wear this or you have to wear that, ever. On any show that I've ever done, you let the actor or the comedian decide what suits them best because they wrote the piece and they'll know what will work for the character better than I do.
Well, can I ask, do you have one or two costumes from that five-year period that you were with SCTV that you're most proud of, that you thought were the most creative and inventive and worked the best?
On SCTV?
Yeah.
Well, I love the fact that Luigi was able to make the Elizabeth the First costume for Andrea as Edith Prickly, all in leopard skin. In one day, he made that for me. So that was my proudest accomplishment on that show. And I loved doing John Candy's Divine stuff.
Oh, yes.
So much fun.
Thanks. Speaking of David Steinberg, that may be my all-time favorite Second City television moment, the Peter Pan, where they're lifting him on the, you know, four men with a wire holding him up. I'm flying. It was beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, you should have seen the way that we tried that out, because it was all the grips and lighting crew and prop guys on the show. We didn't have special effects at that time on the show, so we were trying to counterbalance John, and the first time we did it, they flew all the way to the ceiling of the studio where we were shooting and then sort of crash landed on the floor. It was awful. I have a great picture here in the shop of John and absolute agony in that damned harness we made for him, where we had to make him fly. It was painful for poor John.
Oh, but it was worth that. That's just 3 minutes of magnificent comedy television right there.
That was so much fun. Yeah.
So let's get to the not just dirt, but nice stories, happy, funny stories, because we want to hear about these great legends of TV. And a couple of them have written books. Andrea Martin has her autobiography out, and Martin Short just wrote one. Have you read either of
those
books?
I've read both of them, yeah.
So, I mean, but I think what everybody wants to know is, what was Tony Rosago really like? I'm kidding. I'm joking there. But do you have any memories or stories, good or bad, or both, of these people? Of, let's say, Andrea Martin.
Saul, there is absolutely nothing you can say about any of these people that is a negative.
Good.
They were all so wonderful and special, and it was such a privilege working with all of them. Everybody connected with that show. It was an amazing experience and definitely the highlight of my career. But they were all so nice, kind, generous, and special in their own way, that there isn't one thing you could ever say that is negative about any one of them, ever.
I think that's fantastic. So, don't say anything negative, but do you have any funny anecdotes or things that happened or memories of dealing with them that aren't negative, that are delightful, funny, wonderful?
Oh, my goodness. Can't think of anything specifically. It was a laugh riot from beginning to end, you know. We just laughed and laughed and laughed with everything that we put on, and to see their reactions to things, and it all went so quickly as well. You didn't have time to absorb what was going on, because we were working on that show an average of more than 100 hours a week, at 3 months at a time. So it was exhausting, and you enjoyed every moment that you could. But I am just now, for the first time, watching the shows on the box set, because everybody has borrowed them from me from the last 25 years, that I still haven't had a chance to see the shows.
Oh my! So what are your thoughts when you see them? Do you think, oh, I should have done that costume better, or oh, that was amazing that we did that and so quick? Or are you ever going to just sit back and watch the sketch and laugh?
I'm hoping to laugh at them. Yeah, I've seen things that people have posted to me, like the Lola specials they always post at Christmas time and that kind of thing. And now with the official SCTV fan club and the other one, the SCTV network, I'm getting 20 posts a day there with various sketches that I've never seen.
Oh.
Oh, God, yeah, we did that, right. Oh, wow. And they're wonderful. I'm enjoying them for the first time.
Now, the one thing that we didn't even mention yet is that you did the costumes and designed them and sketched them and all that sort of thing. But occasionally, especially during the Lola Heatherton specials that Catherine O'Hara did so well, you you were on camera and also choreographing the dancers as best you could.
If we can call them dancers.
Yeah, exactly.
They were the riders and crew and me, and all that I knew about dancing was that I took a dancer size class once to lose 30 pounds, and I never made it past the warm-up exercises because I would have two left feet. And that was the funniest thing, because Catherine knew that story. She knew that I could sing, but that they never allowed me to move in a musical at all because I was terrible. I was stiff as a board, had no acting chops or anything like that. So I was thrilled when they knew that whenever they needed a bad actor, bad singer, or a bad dancer, that I could do it and get my puss on camera, you know? And that's going to be my legacy, because no one gives a damn about any of the costume work I've done over the last 45 years. It's that they remember.
Well, they remember you being the head of, as it were, the Jewel Hallmeyer dancers.
That's right, yeah.
And you're an amazing character, too. It's kind of, did you love being on camera? Did that feed your ego a little more than doing the costumes? Or were you so busy that it was just another thing you had to do and get over with?
No, I definitely loved doing it, because I'd always wanted to do musicals and operas and that kind of thing and be a performer. So I knew this was my last crack at it. So I said, I didn't care if I looked terrible, but it fit in with the premise of the numbers, and it worked, you know. And we had a blast doing it, an absolute blast doing it. It was too funny.
Oh yeah, I mean, and you can see the results if you go on YouTube, or if you get the box sets. By the way, when they do and sell the box sets and they syndicate, maybe at some point SCTV, do you get anything? Do you have residuals or anything like that, or that's just for the actors, the writers? And you were paid and boom.
That's just for the actors and the writers. The pretty department never gets residuals unless you're a star like Bob Mackie. But makeup, wardrobe, and hair never get residuals. And the funny thing is, the box set was out very briefly, and I have just recently tried to get one for Eva, my buyer, on the show, thinking that she had a set. And I had dinner with her, and she didn't have a set, and I tried to order it. They're not doing it anymore. So I tried to order them individually, and I've so far managed to get one through Amazon. And the box sets aren't available, and no anyone that's got them isn't selling them. They love them too much.
Not to ask you to do anything illegal, but can't you, I don't know if you're at all in touch with any of the SCTV people, would you be able to just call them and say, hey, can you dub me a DVD?
I don't think they would do it. I've certainly never done it.
Right.
And Andrew Alexander, the executive producer of the show, I certainly wouldn't do it to him, you know.
I mean, you're entitled.
A lot of actors and singers in my life, and they just shun the fact of people dubbing stuff. The money's the royalties that they're losing when that happens, so I've never done it.
I'm just surprised that you didn't get a copy way back when on VHS, and you have, like, that in a basement somewhere. You have all these costumes, but no actual copies of the programs. You're entitled, you know.
The only VHS that I have, funny enough, is of a copy of, they put together for me, of the dancers, when I got a call from William Morris in New York asking if I could go to New York and if I had a copy of the tape, and they had just made me one for my own pleasure. So I said, yeah, I do have a copy. So I flew to New York the next day at their expense. They sent the tickets, and they wanted to do a bad dancer size album at the time. And they said they would do it as long as all of the cast would do two of their characters on the album as well.
Well, and did that work out?
No, that didn't pan out. That scared me to death.
Are you at all in touch with any of the SCTV actor people over the past 20, 30 years?
We see each other usually at the Gilda Radner. It's always something benefit that they do here in Toronto for Gilda's house.
Oh, that's nice.
And some of them are usually performing at that, and we do the wardrobe and the hair for that.
Oh, excellent. See, that's the other question. You stayed with SCTV for 5 years. Was that the full run of them, or did they go on and you ended up doing something else?
No, run of them. Okay. I stayed with them till the end. 2 years in Edmonton and then 3 years back in Toronto.
Well, what was it like doing the last SCTV show? Was it special? Was it poignant? Was it just another show and then you went to a wrap? I mean, what was it like?
Well, I don't think it was ever really announced that that was the definitive last show that we did. It just didn't get picked up, and that happened after we'd finished.
Oh.
It's always that way in the business, unless you have decided to physically end the show. But I believe the cast all had other projects that they wanted to do and get to, like their movies and that kind of thing.
Sure. So, with that done, now you're kind of a free agent, or you're still with the network. What did you end up doing in the 1980s and 90s and what's and now?
Well, no, I was on staff with the network for 8 years in the 70s, and then I went freelance after that. And they called the day I went freelance, because I heard what they were charging for my services, and sometimes I was doing two or three shows at the same time, and they wouldn't give me a raise. I quit and said I'm going freelance, and I got a call an hour later asking me to come back. And so I started, I continued doing more and more shows for them. So I did a lot of variety shows, like the Bobby Vinton show, a lot of American variety shows that were shot up here. And
Hold on. What is Bobby Vinton really like?
What is Bobby Vinton really like? He was very nice, too. But we did two or three shows a week, so that was a killer, too.
Oy, gewalt.
Yeah.
Were there sketches in that, or was it just same guest or something?
Usually two production numbers with dancers in every show.
And you had to do three of those a week? My God.
3 a week, yeah. That's what my memory says. 2 to 3 weeks, it was a killer.
I can imagine. And you also, didn't you do stuff, I guess this is earlier actually, for Phyllis Diller?
Yeah, I did a couple, I didn't do her Vegas clothes or anything, but Phyllis Diller was a guest star a couple of times on shows we did here in Toronto and in Montreal, and I made several outfits for her, which she asked if she could keep, and she let me know that she wore them on stage in Vegas as well. She had a regular designer there that made all of her stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. Any other name-dropping things or stories of the folks that you've worked with? Again, it doesn't have to be dishing dirt, but can just be like, oh, did you know that so-and-so did this? Or, you know, picked his nose between takes or something like that.
One of the funniest anecdotes I have was actually during SCTV when Robin Williams was a guest on the show. And I knocked on his door to put his clothing in. I think he was doing one of the Polynesian towns or something, and with LaRue. And there was no answer, and I had a pass key. And I went in to the dressing room to hang his clothes up. And he was dancing around naked like a crazy man. And he came to me, grabbed my shoulder, and started doing a half hour on the wardrobe guy. And I was laughing so hard, I just stood there and peed myself, and I peed so hard I soaked the rug, my pants, and everything. It was one of the funniest moments I've ever had on the show, because I certainly didn't expect it.
Whoa! You know, I wonder if this is horrible to say, but like a few months ago, Robert Williams is like, oh, life is, I want to stay alive, but I'm so depressed, and wait a minute, I touched a guy and he peed. Maybe I should kill myself. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done that a couple of times in my career. When we had Ethel Merman on, and she was singing There's No Business Like Show Business, I stood at the back of the studio and I peed myself again. I think when I get excited, I have a tendency to do that. Or when I laugh.
Do you wear special undergarments at this point?
I think I should have started investing in Depends or something
early on
in my career.
And boy, thank you for admitting that. This is something that I never would have thought to ask. But wow. And if my show ever goes to television, remind me to get you a special chair. Holy crap. You don't do that, right? You don't crap yourself. You just pee.
I just pee. Yeah, I don't crap myself. No.
And I and I guess it's only fair to ask, and if you don't want to answer, that's totally fine. But if you're standing there watching Ethel Merman, and you're so excited you pee yourself, are you gay?
No.
Wow. Wow! Okay.
No, listen, I wasn't until I was 63, and then I realized I was.
Wait, when
I was 63.
Hold on. So you were heterosexual up until your 60s.
Yeah.
What switch? What the hell? What happened?
It was just a mindset thing for me.
Okay.
It's really, really bizarre, yeah. But I finally figured it out.
So you were a costume designer.
Yeah.
Who used to piss yourself watching Ethel Merman.
Yeah.
But you weren't gay. Until 40 years later. Okay.
Exactly.
So were you ever married? You don't have kids, or
nope.
Do you?
No.
Okay. So are you now in a relationship? Are you cohabiting? Are you married?
No, I never have been.
Oh, okay. Do you want to be? Not with me. I'm married with 21 and a half beautiful children, so...
Wow.
Yeah, we get busy, let me tell you.
No.
Nothing else for Jews to do on a Friday night.
I never have been, never really wanted to, but now I'm beginning to understand why after deeply searching within my soul. You know, never went to a shrink, which I should have done when I was probably 12. But I've finally figured it out now.
And?
That I can just accept myself for who I am, and I don't have to hide it from anybody anymore.
So wait, so you were technically gay when you were 20, you just didn't know it for 40 years.
Yeah.
As opposed to being bisexual, or you were straight, then, I don't know, you looked at Sherman Helmsley in a photograph and you're like, oh my God, I'm gay.
That's right, yeah, no.
Huh.
No, yeah.
Well, we're talking to the proudly gay Joel Hallmeyer here. So what are some of the highlights of your post-SCTV career? Like, you did an American Playhouse there with a couple of famous people, in, like Lee Remick and Marley Matlin. I'm sure that was
God,
a talk.
Oh, God, yes. That was a joy. Lee and I had such a fabulous experience here, because on our days off, Lee and I would go and geeking all over the place. And
is it peeing all over the place? Or antiquing? Antiquing.
No, antiquing, okay. Yeah. And people didn't recognize her, which she loved. And they all thought that we were husband and wife. So they would call me over after Lee had looked at some antique linens or something, and they said, why don't you buy this for the missus? Because I think she really likes it. You know, and she got such a kick out of that.
Wow. And again,
it happened everywhere we went.
Again, this man went antiquing with Lee Remick, and he did not realize he was gay. I mean, my God.
That's right.
So, didn't anybody at SCTV hit you with a hammer and say, by the way, you're dressing up John Candy as Divine. Do you understand something's going on here? Wow.
They all knew, I think.
So what about other highlights post? Because we're talking about 3 decades since Second City Television. So what are some other...
I would have to look. What is that thing... somewhere that most of my resume is published. I don't even remember half of it. But we did a lot of figure skating shows after that, too, which was a thrill for me, because I had been a fan of ABC Wide World of Sports for a long time, and then to finally meet some of these people, these world and Olympic champions, and actually design and make clothes for them was a hoot.
That's okay. That's wonderful. Now
yeah.
What I don't understand is... You're still designing, right? I mean, you rent out your stuff. Oh, you're not.
I quit designing 12 years ago when I had a seizure from the stress of a show that I was working on. And I said, this is a sign. Get out, stop now, and just start renting out that shit, you know.
Because I was wondering, your IMDb credits mostly stop before the last millennium. And then I think
right.
You have one credit in 2001, and boom, that's it. So that's why.
That's when I stopped, yeah.
Have you had a seizure since?
No, never again.
Thank God, that's wonderful. All right, I'm very happy to hear that. Now, they're trying to make a documentary about your life as a designer as SCTV and a Canadian television.
Right.
They're doing a, have they gotten the money? It's a Kickstarter thing, right?
They use Kickstarter for part of it, and they get little chunks of change every once in a while from the National Film Board, I think. At first I thought, you know, who the hell would be interested in my life? But these were friends of mine, and so we went ahead with it. But we started, like, more than 2 years ago, and it's all dependent on when money comes in. So we did a whole bunch of interviews 2 years ago in June and July, and then a day here and a day there. We're doing another day this Saturday. And I think the my obituary will be the closing credits for this thing because it's taking forever to do.
It's a movie. Well, what's the budget? What? How much are they trying to raise?
There is no budget. It's just shoot what you can when you got it. You know, when there some money's become available.
Oh, all right, okay. So, how much footage is in the can, as it were?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I haven't seen any of it.
All right. Well, at least they have, and I guess I hope the money's going toward the rights to pay for use of footage from the things that you've done.
I think that's, they got permission to use the SCTV stuff, and I think they're working on that, and then the music rights are a big chunk of change, too, I think.
Oy, that's right.
And Aaron McMichael is the one that is directing it. And the monies right now go for the camera rental and the lighting rental. Like Saturday night, we do a night shoot out in the street for something that they need as a to sell the project.
I got you. So they're almost still working on the trailers and
yeah,
the promotional stuff to in order to do the Kickstarter,
yeah,
to do the movie. Well, I do.
They have a lot of stuff in the can for the actual movie.
Oh, okay, that's good. That's good. How old, I'm sorry if I didn't ask this before. How old are you now?
I'll be 66.
Oh! Yep. Yeah, I'll finish the movie. Even if it takes 5 years, you'll be all right. You're not having seizures. Are you healthy otherwise?
Yeah, I'm healthy.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank God. Now, we've been talking with the delightful, the funny, the gay, Joel Hallmeyer, who has, of course, worked all those years for SCTV. One question I have to ask you. And you've said only nice things about all the SCTV people, but there was a story that was printed in a newspaper years ago, and it's on this Kickstarter website devoted to the upcoming documentary, about a star who was working or was visiting or guesting on the program and handed you their laundry to do. Assuming that that's what the costume people did, not just giving you the actors' costumes, but...
Well, that was on the first Jack Lemmon special we did. It wasn't on SCTV.
They were faking Jack Lemmon, or Jack Lemmon was there?
No, it was a Jack Lemmon special with Jack.
Oh, with Jack Lemmon, oh, at CTV.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Who...
But there was a person, Fred Willard, I think it was, I had asked him if he needed anything pressed or done for the wardrobe, his own wardrobe that he was wearing on the show. And he didn't realize that I was the costume designer on the show as well as that bad dancer. I think he said something to that effect on one of the DVD box sets.
So they got the story wrong in the paper because it made it sound like just some star breezed in, assumed that a costumer was also just basically like a maid at a hotel, handed you a pile of laundry, and it was in the evening. You had to stand there at the sink and wash it until 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, no, that's the Jack Lemmon one, yeah.
So, but it wasn't like they were being a jerk to you, assuming whatever. That just had to be done?
They just expected that to be done. And I had turned to the producer at the time and said, is this really, no one had ever done that before. I said, do I really have to do this? Because I don't have a washer or dryer. And it was for his first wife and their baby son at the time. And he said, yeah, do it. So I did spend the time at the laundromat until 3 o'clock to get it done.
Well, laundromat or the sink, they said in the article. that you were washing it in your own sink because no laundromat was open.
No, I actually found a laundromat that was open, yeah.
See, never trust what you read in the papers.
That's right, never.
and it was clothing for Jack Lemmon's wife and kid was what you were washing.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Just curious, just because actually we talked to Jack Lemmon's son on this radio program a couple of years ago. I would have asked him about that. I don't know if he would have even remembered or known about that. But
no, he was a baby back then.
Yeah, Chris Lemmon was the person. So, oh, good. I'm glad we kind of cleared that up. And we
yeah.
Were any of the other stars, divas, or presenting a problem? Or again, vice versa, were any of the stars really hilarious and wonderful and great anecdotes about them, the visiting people to SCTV, like your Robin Williams story?
Yeah, most of them were absolutely wonderful and very kind, with a few exceptions, but you expect some bad apples, just like you do in any business.
Oh, who's a bad apple? Who's a bad apple?
I'm not going to tell you, Saul.
Oh, come on!
I can't do that.
Even if they're dead? I mean, I can understand if they're alive, you might work with them again, but what about a dead person who was not so nice?
No, these are all mainly alive still, but it was all through circumstance in their personal lives, so I don't want to comment on that.
You are a gentleman, well, except when you're peeing yourself, and a scholar, ladies and gentlemen. I'm gonna thank so much to Jewel Hallmeyer for being in the neighborhood with us. I want to send people to your website for the Kickstarter thing. Is it, what's the,
I think it's closed now. It was only for a designated period of time, but there will be another one shortly, I think.
But if people want to find out more about you, do you have a website of your own, kind of?
No, only on Facebook. I have people write me all the time. I don't have a website, no.
Oh, so, but that's very nice that people are contacting you on Facebook, and you are alive and well, thank God. And, Jewel Hallmeyer, what are your hopes now? I mean, you're still a young man. You're only in your 60s. What are your hopes for the next 10, 20 years? How long will you continue working? Do you have any retirement goals, things that you'll do when you're not making costumes?
I don't ever want to retire. What I would enjoy doing the most is driving around in my van and finding exquisite vintage clothing and selling it to other people and do that for the rest of my life.
Interesting.
Become the creative, too.
So wait, you would go to, when you say selling it to other people, you would go to TV shows that need something, or are you talking about collectors?
To vintage clothing stores here in Toronto.
No, so you would try and go to this. Well, have you thought about, I'm sure maybe people have thought about this, but museum ideas or things that might go to the Paley Center in New York or a Hollywood?
I've got some of the SCTV costumes still together that are used sometimes for promotional purposes for charity. And things like the Johnny LaRue coat, people come in here all the time, travel from all over America to have their picture taken in it. And that I promised to John's kids.
Oh, that's love. As a matter of fact, the person who put me in touch with you is a friend of the neighborhood named Wayne from a group called The Modest Lads. And there's a picture of him that he sent me with you, and he's wearing the Johnny LaRue costume. And he said that the greatest...
His lovely wife were here last summer, and they had to visit friends in Ontario, and they stopped by Toronto for a week, and we had a great time together.
Oh, that's love. And you were kind enough to let him put on the suit, and he said the one big, terrible disappointment that he had was that when he put on the suit, he was really only about 10, 15 pounds away from fitting in something that fit John Candy. And he realized, I better lose some weight. Well, my only disappointment in this conversation with Jewel Hallmeyer here on Dave's Gone By is that I've made you laugh, but I've never made you laugh quite hard enough to make pish. So maybe next time when we talk.
Make that happen. Okay, Saul, we'll do it again.
That sounds good. Keep a bucket by the chair just in case.
Okay.
Thank you so much. It's been a delight talking with Jewel Hallmeyer. Much success. I hope you get to travel in your van. And hey, if you have any Orthodox rabbi costumes, count me in.
Okay, Saul. Tits up.
Have a good one. Shalom to you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.